Hi, this is Donna, 41 from Durham, North Carolina. I would love to hear your perspective about what younger women can do to be better prepared to manage perimenopause when they get there. Personally, like most women, I've been blindsided by perimenopause and had a reactive approach to handle symptoms versus arriving to this phase prepared and knowledgeable to what I was supposed to expect and do. Thank you for all the work that you're doing. So happy to see these conversations happen more often.
Welcome to our Perimenopause What the F podcast, brought to you by the Peri community. In this podcast, we talk everything, and we mean everything, perimenopause. We navigate through all our what the F perimenopause moments and all, is this normal? Questions. We talk with perimenopause experts, thought leaders, and inspirational voices of the community. To connect with other perimenopause warriors, download our free Peri app. You can find the link in our show notes. And now let's dive right in.
So I'm Dr. Asma Ahmad. I am Chief Medical Officer and co-founder of Care Fertility. I am also a double board certified obstetrician gynecologist and reproductive endocrinology and infertility specialist. And I guess I won't go too far into it, but Dr. Javed, you probably can agree to this happening. But like back in the day, I did not want to be a doctor. I know that I'm like all over the medicine now. But in this, I'm a first generation South Asian immigrant in the community. It was like, you can either be a doctor, a lawyer, an engineer. And for that very reason, I was like, I'm not going to be a doctor. I was actually thinking about going into genetics. The reason why I went into medicine, and actually like along the lines of like what we're talking about today and what you and I both do, Dr. Wade, is like, I realized really early on that, and my inspiration was women, that women just have all these difficulties when accessing healthcare. And, you know, they're the CEOs of the household and the CMOs of the household, but many times they're the last ones to receive care. And that's if they receive any, like it's the husband, it's the children, the in-laws, everyone else. And then it ends up being this. And because of that, and whether that's like society, culture, and other barriers, they have that limited access. And sometimes even that lack of knowledge of like, what are the best practices around my health? How can I improve my health? What should I be looking out for in terms of my health? So that's kind of like what led me to this and kind of led me to co-founding this company to, you know, increase access to fertility care, reduce those barriers, get people into the best quality clinics, and then have support throughout their journeys.
So I'm a board certified OBGYN. I'm not double boarded like one of us on this call. Well, I went into medicine because I fought it as well. And my dad basically said, I'm not paying for college unless you're going to be pre-med. But for me, I almost watched my mother die because of the healthcare system. She had chest pain, shortness of breath, left arm pain. And they kept telling her, it's caffeine, it's your children. Like, you're just stressed out. And I was pre-med looking at her EKG going, it's abnormal. So I was like, I'm going to go into medicine. I'm going to change the world, you know, and went to residency, you know, got my first job, was seeing 50 patients a day. And the realities of our very broken healthcare system smacked me in my idealistic face. Like, I felt like a failure as a mother, because I had children at the time, but also as a doctor. And so when the timing was right, I quit my job and I told my husband, I said, I'm either going to create a space where women can be partners in their care. And I wrote down three words, education, advocacy, and empowerment. Or I'm going to stay home and raise these beautiful babies, which, by the way, came from infertility as well. And he's like, good God, woman, you'll drive us all bananas. And so I opened my first location. And the goal was not to create this national brand with all these locations. It was like to have a really nice practice in Cincinnati, Ohio for gynecology, menopause, and sexual health care. And then I saw women from 35 states and three countries coming to access care because we take care of patients via tele and in person for menopause and sexual health care. And we do it within an insurance-based system, which was unheard of. And so my sister, who is my co-founder, and another one of our co-founders are like, let's fundraise. And they're like, three minority women from the Midwest. you have less than 0.5% chance, and you've done this too. And to date, we've raised $30 million and opened in 5 markets. And our goal is to have HER-MD centers all around the country so we can normalize gynecology, menopause, sexual health care, and really empower women. And that's my goal. That's the mission.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is that there's so many limitations with people being able to get their foot in that door. And you mentioned one of them is like, not all treatments are covered by insurance. And that's the thing, is like, for most people, especially in the United States, they get that insurance through their employers. And so that's kind of what we've targeted, is working with employers and health systems and health plans to get them that financial coverage to be able to get their foot through the door, but then leading them to the best quality care with the best quality outcomes. And then just that ongoing support that they need along the way. It's kind of like that augmenting the healthcare that they might be getting with that primary healthcare provider by giving that like around the clock access to emotional support, nutrition, as well as, you know, just like getting them through the journeys of pregnancy, postpartum, perimenopause, menopause, and then fertility as well. And similar to you, like, we've seen that global impact as well. We're in over 130 countries. So really excited about that as well. So let's jump to some of the questions from the community. Dr. Dubey, maybe I can start by asking you one of the questions, and then we can kind of go back and forth. Of course, if anything pops up. Okay, perfect. So one of the questions from the peri community is, what is your perspective about what younger women can do to be better prepared to manage perimenopause when they get there?
Oh God, my teenage girls would chime in right now and be like, they know more about menopause, I think, than the average American woman right now. It's kind of scary because they're only 14 and 17. But so many stories for me from women start with, if I only knew. I mean, even if you look at Oprah, she was sent to what, 8 cardiologists before they figured out her palpitations were just her menopause. And so I think it starts with education. And whether that's talking to your girlfriend, your mother, your sister, coming to an event like this, going to an in-person event, and just learning about the symptoms of menopause. So many people say it wouldn't have been so scary if they just had known. And, you know, one of the barriers is less than 20% of OBGYNs are trained in menopause and sexual health care. And so going to community events, talking to each other, empowering each other, the more we are open about our own journeys, particularly in healthcare, I think the less stigma, taboo, shame, barriers there will be for women to access education and care. So my girls are hysterical. They're like, we're getting hormones the minute, like they know what menopause is. I don't think they're going to be afraid of it. And they're very savvy. And so that's what I'm seeing with the younger patients, because at HER-MD, we see them as young as 13, you know, until end of life. And so I think knowing that perimenopause can precede menopause by up to 10 years, that it can mimic all the same things. People are like, well, this is just perimenopause. Why is it so bad? And it's like, oh no, they're sisters. You know, you can have all the same symptoms, hot flashes, insomnia, low sex drive, joint pain, you know, dry skin, changes in your hair. It's just a matter of whether or not you're still having any type of menstruation or bleeding. And so for everyone, that's different. And so people are like, it can start as young as my 30s. Like, I'm way too young for that. And I think they still have this image of like the golden girls in their mind. And I'm like, no, like Michelle Obama, J-Lo, like that's what you need to think of. Like the perimenopause, menopause definition has completely changed. I think the image needs to change. I think it doesn't mean end of life. I think it's a new beginning. And I think the more we empower ourselves with education and transparency, the easier the journey is going to be. So that's a very long answer to your very simple question, but I want people to feel empowered and like their partners in their healthcare.
You know, I think that's very true, in that a lot of women just don't know what to expect and they feel like they're caught off guard. And I actually think it's really, really great that you've spoken to your daughters about this, because when this is actually very timely, because the other day when I was doing it, you know, I was in IVF today, but I was doing it a couple of days ago. And I was talking to our all women team that day about, we were talking about hormones, and we got onto the topic of menopause. And I was like, hey, let's just do a quick poll here. And all but one said that they felt prepared, you know, about menopause or perimenopause and what that meant. all but one could name like any other symptoms besides hot flashes or basically like, sorry, it's the opposite. Only one of them knew other symptoms besides hot flashes. The rest of them were like, oh, hot flashes. And, you know, again, everyone but that one person understood, like, when does menopause actually occur? Like, they didn't know that there was a difference between perimenopause and menopause. And these were all women in the healthcare field taking care of other women. And that one person who did know more answers was someone who actually had already gone through the stage of menopause. So it was just very interesting to see that we, you know, just as women, we don't get that talk. No one just sits us down and says, like, this is what to expect. And we saw the same thing through our menopause in the workplace report that we had at Carrot Fertility. We saw that less than 20% of women felt like they had that higher level of understanding of what menopause was truly going to be like. So I think it is really about empowerment and education to help them understand what that's going to be like.
Yeah. And I think running away from misinformation. I had a patient today. It's funny. We're both in scrubs. We did not tell each other. Both were in clinic. And so I saw a patient today, and this is a new one. I have heard them all. And so she went in with very typical menopausal symptoms. It had been more than a year since she had had a cycle. So she met the definition. And she told her doctor hot flashes, insomnia, weight gain, decreased libido. It was negatively impacting her marriage. And the doctor literally said this to her. When you're young, you are like a tree that is tall and wispy and bendable and flexible, and you're meant to basically procreate. And as you age, your trunk and your middle get thicker, you get dry and brittle, and you're just meant to provide shade to your offspring. And that is now your lot in life. So she was told she's a thick tree, basically, that is dry and brittle and is going to doom to live her days. And God love her. This is what I tell people. When people aren't trained, they're not giving you sound advice. They're shaming you. They're not offering you real evidence-based solutions. Run. Because people are like, how can I get my provider to listen to me? I'm like, they're not going to, because obviously they're not trained. And most providers I know are not ill-willed. They just, like you said, they don't know. And so run. Educate yourself. And if you find yourself in an office where a doctor is comparing you to a tree, in that type of light, I would run. And so now I'm going to throw a question back at you. So talked about perimenopause these years preceding menopause. And so if someone's going through perimenopause and they decide, you know, I want to have children, or, you know, I've met people who said they discovered they are perimenopausal as they were struggling with fertility, does that mean that they can't get pregnant? And I want to thank our peri community for sending that in. So if they're perimenopausal and they're wanting to get pregnant, does it mean that they can't once they have that diagnosis?
That's a great question. Actually, to go back to that healthcare providers and not understanding that, I want to clarify that they weren't like the providers of care. They were, you know, our team, our amazing team of like medical assistants and stuff like that. But I wanted to get a sense of like women who are in the field of healthcare, like, you're exposed to this, like, you know, how much do we know? And then, of course, like the menopause workplace survey about women overall in the workplace. So yeah, is it possible to get pregnant if you are perimenopausal, and what might that look like? So to start, yes. So when you are perimenopausal, you are still ovulating. Now that ovulation might become a little bit more irregular or unpredictable, but before menopause occurs, you know, there's perimenopause, and menopause means you have now officially stopped ovulating and having periods for an entire year. So up until that point where you just are not ovulating at all anymore, you can still get pregnant. So obviously, if you are trying to avoid pregnancy, you should still take precautions and use some type of contraceptive method to prevent pregnancy. Now, that being said, it does become more challenging to get pregnant as we get older. And that's because as we get older, more and more of our eggs, and they still have to divide to become fully mature when you ovulate, more and more of them become genetically abnormal. So then every time we're trying, the chance of getting pregnant is lower and our risk for miscarriage gets higher. Now, some people may say, like, well, you know, what can I do? Obviously, if you're still having more predictable, regular cycles, then what I would do is to time having sex around the time of ovulation. The egg, when you ovulate, lasts about 12 to 24 hours. Sperm inside the female body can last about 3 to 5 days. So you can have sex, like, you know, even 5 days before ovulation, leading up until the day of ovulation and the day after. In those cases where your cycles are now becoming more unpredictable, where in perimenopause, it can start with being like, you know, several day difference, like we're, whereas before they were 28 to 30 days, now they're 21 to 37 days. You know, if that's becoming a little less predictable, and, you know, ovulation tracking kits and all that can sometimes also be a little bit more challenging at that time, it's never too early to talk to a fertility doctor about, you know, testing where your hormones are at, helping you track your ovulation. And of course, like, and Dr. Vaid, you know this as well, like some things can sometimes mimic perimenopause, like, for example, hypothyroidism, which can also cause irregular cycles. So you want to make sure that, you know, one, you make sure that you're ruling out everything else, and then you understand like when you are ovulating can help time things with that. And that's if you're trying to have, you know, trying to get pregnant at home with timed intercourse, that would be one way.
No, and I tend as a general OBGYN, if I am concerned about hormone levels or earlier menopause or very early perimenopause, I get them in sooner to a specialist like you. And so that's the other piece of advice I have from a general OBGYN. If you are concerned about that, if the women in your family do go through menopause earlier, if you've discovered that you are having perimenopausal symptoms and you have ruled out thyroid disease, like you said, that can mimic it, I would get into an REI like yourself sooner than later. So that's the only thing I would change or recommend differently for someone who's experiencing that.
From our peri community, one of the questions was, what do you look for in a provider or healthcare professional when it comes to perimenopause or menopause care?
Yeah, so there are two big conferences or associations. So the Menopause Society, it was known as NAMS. ISHWISH is more around the sexual health piece, but still there's a lot of sexual health issues that can come up in perimenopause, menopause, or even outside of that. 43% of women are affected by some type of sexual issue. And so both of these communities, both Menopause Society and ISHWISH, the International Society for the Study of Women's Sexual Healthcare, have providers who are listed in their directory, who've been through their training. And so that's the first thing. You want to make sure that someone actually has specialized or learned or taken on additional training in this area. Number two, someone actually wants to do this or has a passion about it. So if someone's doing this, cutting you off, not listening to you, minimizing your concerns, your time is just as precious as theirs. You know, don't waste time. So you want someone who has a passion about it. You want someone who has expertise about it, someone who has done the training, and someone who is actually going to listen to you, because that's the biggest thing. You know, number one, women are not little men. Number two, there's no one size fits all. I remember getting interviewed for hormones and it's like, okay, so it's okay for this bucket, but not okay for this bucket. I'm like, no, you can't say that, because even someone who's had XYZ, if this is going on and this is their desire and they have been counseled, it is still okay. I'm not going to say it's okay for every single cancer patient, for example, but in this instance, yes, it is okay. And patient advocacy, autonomy, and choice is astronomically important. So you want someone who is going to see you, who is going to hear you, and who is going to partner with you, and someone, most of all, who is not going to dismiss you. And so if you don't find someone in your area, there are great now, you know, direct-to-consumer telehealth brands that are popping up that at least can give you a consult. So there are great menopause brands that are popping up that, you know, have that telehealth. Or ask your girlfriends. You know, I had a group of four women drive down from Albany, New York today to our New Jersey location because one of them saw me talking, saw us, and then she brought her sister and her girlfriends with her. And so that's what I love. Like women, when we find someone who is an amazing hairdresser or we find an amazing boutique, we tell each other. So we should share the same way when we've had an outstanding experience with a provider. And I know sometimes it's hard to talk about these issues, particularly when you grow up in a, like I grew up in a culture where we didn't talk about this kind of stuff, right? And my mom is still shocked that I, you know, that I built a whole business and practice around menopause and sexual health care. But, you know, we just need to be transparent and help each other get to the right provider. And so that's the best when we share our providers. And so that's what you're looking for in a provider. And then obviously bedside manner. Everyone's going to have a different taste in how they approach patients and how you want to, you know, talk to your provider. And so a provider may, I've had some patients say, oh my God, they had all the accolades. They were top of their class. They were at blah, blah, blah university. And we just did not jive. I just didn't feel comfortable. these are personal issues and you have to have great rapport. And so that's the other thing I would say. You have to look for the bedside manner that works for you. It's a relationship in your life. And because you're going to spend 40% of your life in menopause, thanks to increasing life expectancy, you really want to make sure that relationship is going to, you know, stand the test of time. So that's my advice as a menopause provider.
No, I think those are all very great points. And I think sometimes we put ourselves in situations where we're like, okay, well, this provider is close to me, or this provider has, you know, those great credentials, or, you know, we just try to explain it to ourselves. And then we stick ourselves in that situation where we don't feel comfortable and we don't feel like we're getting the care that we need or want. I think you also brought up a great point, was just that community level support, in that, you know, whether it's like your girlfriends or friends or family or whoever's going through a similar experience, talking to them about what you're going through, about what worked for them, what didn't work for them, what resources they had, can also be good. I've had patients tell me that, where, you know, especially those that are going through early menopause, like, I really wish I had someone that I could talk to because I feel like I'm all alone in this space and I don't really know where to go or who to talk to. And that's another reason why we also have this community support groups through the Care at Fertility platform, so that people have access to that community, in addition to like the telehealth and education component that you were talking about. But yeah, I think it is really important to find that right match with the provider, because that can really change your entire experience of like what you're going through during that stage of your life.
And so many health outcomes. There are so many hidden things that delayed diagnosis can negatively impact. So, you know, we know that worsening hot flashes can be a sign of underlying cardiovascular disease. And that's why I nearly lost my mother. And if you are delayed in making that diagnosis, it can negatively impact pregnancy and fertility and whether or not someone can start a family. And so, from our peri community, can you talk to me about that? Can you tell me how perimenopause may have a negative influence on my IVF treatment and journey? And how can I stay sane? This is a two-parter. You got this. So, can perimenopause have a negative influence on my IVF treatment and journey? First part. And then how do I stay sane during both?
Okay, great question. And yes, hopefully my double board certified will help me answer the two-parter. So again, like, you know, when we think about age is one of the biggest predictors of fertility, has a very, very big impact. And one of the things that also changes with age is that there's this hormone in your body called follicle stimulating hormone, or FSH. And so that's, as that's going up, when it comes to IVF and fertility treatment, sometimes it can make your treatment a little bit more challenging. So like, some ways that it might do that is that, one, it might be harder to get you to respond to medications, and you might have to do something called priming or suppression. It's a type of like a pre-treatment before you stimulate your ovaries, so that when you start getting into the stimulation phase and you're taking those injectable medications, that your body has a better response. The other thing is that as you get older, we talked a little bit about egg quality, but those egg counts also drop. And so you might need higher dose medications to get your body to respond, compared to someone who might have more eggs or might be younger and has more eggs. Also, again, going back to the quality, there's that higher percentage of eggs that are genetically abnormal, meaning they have an abnormal number of chromosomes. So then what that can do is it can make the success rate per IVF cycle attempt lower. So then think about it. It's like, you have to take maybe additional medications before you stimulate. You have higher dose medications. Your response may be lower with fewer eggs. You have a lower percentage of eggs that are normal. So definitely can be more challenging. It might also take more treatments than someone who's doing it at a younger age to, like, you know, reach that goal that you have of how many children that you want if you're perimenopausal. What I also tell people around that time is, like, if you are starting to build your family at a later point in time and or have a lower number of eggs, think about how many children you want overall. Don't just focus on that first child, so that you can also at the same time do fertility preservation to get extra embryos and freeze those for potentially future children. This is not one of the questions you asked me, and I'll get to the same part, but One thing that I've been seeing coming up online and social media is like IVF causing menopause. And I just want to clarify that IVF does not cause menopause. And when you're doing IVF treatment, you're taking medications that can sometimes make your own level of hormones go up, which is that FSH hormone that I was talking about, or you could be injecting higher levels of that hormone into your body. And sometimes that can mimic symptoms that are similar to menopause. But I did want to clarify that misconception that IVF itself doesn't cause menopause. Now, back to the staying sane part, I think this is so, so important. And I thank the community for asking this question, because for a lot of people who are going through IVF, so many of them have tried on their own or have even tried other treatments before getting to the IVF point. So that could be timing intercourse or sex, or doing what's called an intrauterine insemination or IUI with their partner sperm or donor sperm. And that's a lot. I mean, even just trying to time things with ovulation and having to wait 2 weeks, good God, like when I've done it, I wish there was like a button that could tell you right away and you could move on to the next step. Like, did it work or did it not work? And I say this because sometimes you're so consumed with your goal, like for example, trying to get pregnant, that you lose yourself and you don't give yourself that grace or time or self-love. And so make sure you have someone or other people as your support through the process, because having someone there to talk to, whether that's a professional or a friend or, you know, someone at work that's gone through something similar, I mean, that can really, really help you get through that. Going back to the community thing. And at CARE, what we do is people can have access to emotional support experts. They can talk to fertility experts about their treatments, their journey, ask questions that they might have forgotten during their consult, and then have that person so that when you are going through the journey, that they can be there for support. Because again, it can be very challenging, especially for those who might have lower egg counts, be in, you know, like in their late 30s, 40s, and starting to build their family at that time. And especially perimenopausal can be especially challenging.
Well, and I think when people in your family haven't been through it, or culturally it may not be acceptable. I have polycystic ovarian or ovary syndrome and had to go through infertility for all three. And I normally don't get this personal, but there's something about you. And so
I have it too. So maybe that's what it is.
Maybe that's what it is. And so, you know, I had a boy and girl, and we were trying for a third. And for me, it just felt right. Like every time I walked past this bedroom in our house, I was like, I feel like I need to tuck one more child in. And so I remember people saying to me, you have a healthy boy and girl, you know, you should just be thankful. And it was like, I was thankful, but I just knew for me, like with that piece of advice that you gave, I always pictured having a bustling household and having, you know, three or four children. And so for me, I wanted another one, and it wasn't helpful when I heard from people, well, just be thankful, just stop. And it was like, I'm doing what's right for me. I'm not even seeking advice out. And so for me, it was a decision to like block out that advice, even from trusted people, and say, no, I'm going to have body autonomy. I'm going to make a choice about what is right for me and my family and what my husband and I want. And so, you know, we kept on, and luckily, you know, little Maya came into our lives, and, you know, I have a little sign in her room that says, and then there was you. Her older siblings love to tease that that's a mean message, but I'm like, no, that's a very kind message. Not, and then there was you eye roll. It was like, no, it's you. So
typical older siblings.
Yes. Well, leave it to the older siblings, particularly when you have an older brother, but you know, it just makes them tougher, I think.
So the Perry community was asking like what you could do, and you kind of touched on this earlier, but like, what could you do if you feel that your primary care provider isn't believing you and your symptoms? Like, we talked a little bit about like what you look for in your, but what if like the person you go to is dismissing you?
Yeah. So I think you go to those websites, you know, those educational events, or, you know, talk to a girlfriend. The other thing that's fun is you can online find this validated, like if you have a sexual health issue, like 43% of women do, it's called an FSFI, Female Sexual Function Index, and it measures all the domains about sexuality. So sexual health is about, you know, fertility. It is about contraception. It is about treating you know, infections, but it also is so much more. It's about talking about female desire and pain and arousal and orgasm. Yes, I said it, you know, and dryness and genital urinary syndrome of menopause. And so it's this validated tool that the FDA measures when we're talking about female sexual health drugs that affect a lot of us in perimenopause and menopause. And so you can take this test, and yes, you can find it online. It's called an FSFI, Female Sexual Function Index, and take it. And the goal is to have, for those of you who like math and numbers, you know, greater than 25, but what it does is break down all those domains. And so I use this in my clinical practice. I've had patients who were seeking help. They were getting dismissed. They went online. They took this test. They took it into their doctor and was like, look, here is a data-driven test. Like, there is obviously something wrong. I need help. And if you can't help me, you know, can you get me to someone who can? And so that's another tool that I love to tell patients about. Plus, it gives them some insight. And I've had patients cry and say, I've been saying this for 8 years. Like, no matter who it is, you know, it could be Chris Hemsworth, it could be Brad Pitt, whoever, you know, your dream is, and I have no desire, or I can't orgasm, or it's taking me longer, or my orgasm feels weak, or I have no arousal and my body's not responding. And it's very distressing to them. And so by giving them optionality to figure out what's going on with them and another tool, another data set, it is a lot of fun for me to empower patients about their own sexual health care. And it's another way for them to take their health care into their own hands. And then just FYI, because I love telling people about evidence-based tools. So if you are waiting to find a provider for sexual health, there are two apps out there now with data that show that they help with all those domains of sexuality for women. One is called Rosie, founded by another OBGYN like us, Dr. Lindsay Harper. And it is written erotica, or, you know, written stories that can get women in the mood. We're more likely to have reactive desire. And if our partner has a lot of spontaneous desire, sometimes we have a hard time keeping up. And so that's like a nice little tool. It's evidence-based. They have clinical studies that prove that it helps. And then there's another one called Dipsy. So for people who tell me they don't want to read anymore, or they can't read, or they don't like to read, it's audio erotica. And so you can listen to it, but it's another validated tool. And the final piece of advice I will give about sexual health while you're waiting, the first ever clinical trial was actually presented at a conference about 18 months ago about vibrators and pelvic floor health and actually how it helps with some of the domains of sexuality. So there are definitely some things that you can do while you're waiting to get in to a doctor who specializes in sexual health care and menopause. And there's some great direct-to-consumer brands that have vaginal moisturizers, vaginal lubricants. I'm sure you recommend those to your patients as well as you're telling them to have intercourse. You know, Mod, Dame, Uberlube. These are some of my favorites. Stripes, Naomi Watts' company. She's got something called Badge of Honor. And so I love for people to have multiple things in their toolkit, because not everyone wants a prescription medication or wants to undergo a treatment. Or wants to, you know, necessarily, or can't get into a sexual health provider. So I love telling people about things that they can do to just dip their toes into sexual health care or to menopause and to really take their health care into their own hands.
I love that. And I really like that you bring up those clinically validated tools, because again, like, as a provider, one should not be dismissing the symptoms of the patient. But in that case, you walk in and you're like, here's evidence-based medicine. And like, you know, here's what I have to show you. And I think that, you know, going in and walking in with that additional information can be really helpful. Now, this isn't quite a question, but there was a comment, very interesting. We hear the question a lot, if IVF can cause early menopause. And I kind of want to explain why that's not the case, in that we have, I call them like a wave of eggs that come through every cycle. So you have a bunch of eggs that are trying to grow, and your body then selects one egg that you ovulate. So like, if you're someone who's ovulating regularly that month, you're going to ovulate one egg. The rest of those eggs that were trying to grow or had the potential to grow, you lose them. So those are eggs lost. They are no longer there. And that's going to happen if you don't use any of those eggs during that cycle. So when you're doing IVF, what's happening is you're stimulating the growth and development of those other eggs that are present. And with your doctor, you would then determine like, what's the goal? Like, you know, for someone who has 50 or 60, you don't want all of them to grow. That's not so safe. So you're going to have some goal, like we're trying to get X number of eggs to grow with these medications. And then those eggs are retrieved, could be used for IVF. So like fertilization, development into an embryo, and then transferring back to your uterus to get pregnant. So it's not actually depleting your eggs sooner than you would have otherwise. It's trying to, in a way, like my mentor used to say this during fellowship, rescue, and I'm putting quotation marks around rescue, is trying to use those eggs that you are going to lose that month anyway. And so that's why it doesn't accelerate your ovarian aging. It doesn't make you go into perimenopause or menopause sooner. You're actually trying to use some of those eggs that you would have lost otherwise. So I did want to clarify that, because I think that's sometimes why there's that misconception around it, is that, oh, they're taking my eggs out. That means I'm going to lose my eggs sooner and I'm going to become perimenopausal or menopausal sooner. But that's actually not the case. So I hope that that helps to like clarify why it doesn't do that.
No, that's a great explanation. And I get that question all the time too. Is that a risk factor? Am I going to go through menopause earlier, or is it still predictable upon my family history? And so as a founder in the menopause and sexual healthcare space, I'm so glad to have another female founder in this space talking about all things women's healthcare, infertility, fertility, sexual healthcare, menopause. And so tell me what you have going on coming up at Carrot that you are super excited about.
Well, everything. But, you know, we are a company that supports people through infertility and fertility. But again, we talked a little bit about perimenopause, menopause, but we also have a lot of support for people who don't have infertility but are trying to get pregnant in the comfort of their home, helping them learn how to time intercourse. What are the different things that you can do to optimize your fertility? Like, how do you optimize your health so that you not only have a good chance of getting pregnant, but staying pregnant, having a healthy pregnancy, and then also providing support postpartum, whether that be using doula support virtually, in person, using your benefit, lactation consultants, and then helping you prepare for your return to work journey if you choose to return to work. So that is all integrated into what we offer. In addition to that, we are also offering, you know, support around gender affirming care, because, you know, it's very interesting. I did train in places where there were very large transgender community, but even in those situations, I felt people came to me, and I sometimes felt myself, I didn't know where to send everyone all the time and they didn't know where to go. So I think it's really important to have support around that so they can find the right providers, that they understand what that process looks like, that they have access to the treatments that they need through those journeys. So those are just some of the things that I'm excited about. But what about you, Dr. Javeda? What about her MD and what's coming over there?
So we are also working to partner with employers, hospital systems this year to expand our footprint across the country, both with, you know, people are sending messages, I wish you were in this area, I wish you were in there. We are coming, I promise. So you don't have to go as far, but this girl has got to get back to fundraising. And so we are utilizing our partnerships to expand our footprint across the country. We are going deeper into markets and opening new locations in our existing markets, but plan on opening centers all around the country. I am speaking on Friday. That's how you and I met, at an event with the Swell all around women's sexual health care. So if you are in New York City, there are some tickets still available, and there are some fantastic doctors, founders who are going to be there talking about all things women's sexual health care. It's an event by the Swell. And we have another event for HerMD. Please follow us on Instagram. We're on Facebook, HerMD.com. I'm speaking in New Jersey at The Loop in February. And so would love for you to meet us that way, see us on stage, or check out one of our locations.
Oh, great, great. And similarly, you can find me on Instagram. It's Dr_Asma. Or on LinkedIn. And you can also learn more about Carrot Fertility at carrotfertility.com.
Thank you, everyone, for hanging out with us. This was great.
Yes, thank you. We're so excited to have you, Perry community. And thank you, Perry, for hosting.
Yes, thank you, Perry, for getting this information out to everybody. We so appreciate events like this.
Thank you Thank you for listening to our Perimenopause What the F podcast. The perimenopause journey can be lonely, and it doesn't have to be that way. Make sure to download our free Peri app to connect with perimenopause warriors in the same stage of life. See you next time, Peri sisters.